Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today posts under the name of Loud and Often. He has been in the blackjack apprenticeship sphere of influence for a number of years, and we'll be talking about playing blackjack and other things. Loud and Often, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So how did you get started playing blackjack, and when was this?
Well, this was circa 2005, and I read somewhere that the game could be beaten. I think this was around the time that Bringing Down the House came out, that book. And so I read a little bit from what I could find online and went and tried my hand. And I did remarkably well for my first, handful of sessions playing with $40 or whatever. Thought I was a superstar at it. And while I was doing that, I ran into somebody at church, and I was giving them a $100 bill, sort of giving myself a chance to pat myself on the back and say, I've been doing this new thing called card counting, and I'm going to pay you back with this $100 bill. And he said, oh, well, have you met Ben? And I said, who's Ben? And he said, well, he's buying a house. That's how well he's done at card counting. And so I was beside myself with the possibility that I would have found somebody who did this at church. And so I met with Ben, and he handed me a Stanford Wong book, and I read through that and realized I ran all the numbers and realized that not only was I probably not playing a perfect game, but if I was playing a perfect game, I stood to earn about 5 cents an hour going forward.
5 cents, man. That's we were talking to Levi Mitch on the last show, and he started out at $7 an hour, so 5 cents.
Right.
That's were you in a place where they had like $2 tables or something?
No, I was just playing a break even game essentially. Inconsistency, low stakes, but just a lot of bad playing decisions, I'm sure. So that was where I then made an early retirement from card counting, and it was a year later that Ben, who helped start the church team with Colin, was recruiting people, and I had just gotten laid off. And so I entered back into the world of card counting and sort of had to untrain myself so that I could then retrain properly.
Right. And so then you went on to play with the church team for how long?
Yes, the life of the church team. So 2006 through the end of 2011.
And you were the largest money winner on the church team. Is that correct?
That's true. I played more than anyone else and won more than anyone else on the team.
Wow. How many hours were you putting in?
I was averaging just about 40 plus hours a month. I think the difference was I was married with kids. So these other guys were sort of single dudes who had all the time in the world. And so I felt pressed. My time was limited. I was either at home watching kids or hitting the road and playing blackjack for, 3, 4, or 5 day stretches. So I would really just, my wheels would be turning the moment I hit the ground, and I would just do it. And I needed to pay bills and, support kids. So I felt like I was motivated that way, but I also wanted to prove something, and I wanted to be the leader on the team and, do more, win more. So I just had the fire.
And your background was in both. I mean, I know that you're a writer for one, but you also had a background in theology of some sort?
That's right. I went to, you could call it a seminary, but it was a school of theology for a master's degree after I'd gotten a writing degree in California. I went to Canada and studied theology to get a master's. I went not to become a pastor like my father, not to become a missionary. I really wanted to sort of give some foundation to my writing. I was inspired by C.S. Lewis and some of these writers who were creative writers, but theology was sort of the game that they played. So I went, I mean, to me, it was a combination of that sort of the need to backpack across Europe. It was a little bit of that, sort of finding myself. It was a little bit of just wanting more education. And, you know, I was raised by a pastor and a pastor family. So I kind of wanted to figure those things out away from the sort of home life, home environment, and just figure things out on my own. So that's why that was there.
And did you see any did you have any conflict at all between theology and gambling?
You know, in the early going, I didn't. And I'm trying to I've been writing my memoir about this stuff, and I didn't have a lot of conflict because I didn't let myself have any conflict. I've gone through life with this kind of ability to be invulnerable. And so actually, as I'm writing this memoir, I'm going deeper into myself and coming to terms with conflict sort of like after the fact. But it's, I never had a problem with the morality thing. In fact, I felt a little bit rebellious, like, you know, this thing, I'm not doing this for the love of money. I'm not drawn to the sins of, you know, Vegas or whatever. These things were never had a hold on me. And I liked to kind of, in my mind, sort of flaunt that, like, you know, I'm above this. I'm doing something that is mathematical and that I can win at, and it's a business and all the rest. And I think being sort of impermeable was a benefit to playing, but it didn't benefit anything relationally. So, you know, as life's gone on and I've had to, you know, work through family things and be a good friend and a good brother and a good son, then these things come back into play, and it's fun to think about them and talk about them.
Also, it's unusual. It's not that unusual because I'm the same way, but you have both this right brain and left brain kind of thing, right, with your creative work and then this card counting, which is sort of the opposite,
yeah.
This mathematical. And for
Very
me,
much.
Kind of the arts was always – you know, like a habit that you have to afford. So you need a way to make a living to support your art habit. How did you think about that?
Yeah, you know, I'm very, very left and very right. So my creative stuff is really sort of, you know, bordering on almost the absurd. I love fiction. I love very short, very wild, exploratory, sort of mind-bending sorts of fiction, not genre fiction, but more literary fiction. And then the math side. And, you know, trying to sort those things out, one time I spoke with this meditation guru, and he asks all these questions about me and about blackjack and about my creativity. And he came to the determination, he said, you've discovered a career where you are rewarded for patient observation, and your reward is moments of rebellion. So now that feels like a fit with my writing, because as a writer, I'm an observer first, and then the form of my writing feels a little more like rebellion, like going into deep space and trying things out. And to me, that's a little bit like card counting. I wait and I wait and I observe and I watch and I think and I, you know, and then the moment comes and I strike with all I've got.
So when you were playing with the church team, your top bet was up at like 2 by 3,000 or something like that?
That's right.
And did you have any unusual or crazy barring stories, any back roomings, any of that kind of stuff?
Well, I learned quickly not to go into the back rooms. But, you know, here and there, if you, you know, there was one foot chase with the Indiana police.
How did that happen?
Well, I was leaving a casino and, you know, on those riverboat casinos, they have a long tunnel that takes you from the boat, so-called, to the land. And there were three men sort of walking briskly and following me. They were in plain clothes, no signifying anything. And as I walked faster, they walked faster. And at some point I found myself sprinting and they were sprinting and they were not saying anything, not announcing themselves, not telling me to stop. They were just chasing me. So the chase was on and I was in a stairwell before they yelled police. And then I decided, well, I can either keep running and face whatever consequences are coming or I can stop. So I chose to stop. In a place where there were still people walking by. So it's like if I'm about to be assaulted, there will be witnesses. But in the end, they said, we're the police. And I said, I want to call the real police. They said, we are the real police. You know, this is Indiana, whatever. I don't know what the law is there, but they were police. And the casino had said that I might be hiding chips to avoid a CTR, which was not the case. And things got cleared up. They, you know, looked at all my money and asked a lot of questions. And then at the end of it said, can you please teach us how to beat the casinos? Because we don't like them very much.
That's funny.
So that's a different way to defund the police, I guess. Interesting.
I guess so.
So after the church came ended, Colin Jones, who was a part of the church team, started boot camps. How long ago? So were you involved in the starting of the boot camps and are you still involved?
I did not start the boot camps. That was Colin and that was right in the middle of the church team. And so he would have a boot camp, you know, in Las Vegas and I would time my trip to be Las Vegas and then I would swing into the boot camp as this sort of, here's the pro who's doing it. And I would give a little speech or a little talk. And that was the first boot camp. And then as they went, as time went on, I just sort of became Colin's sort of, first assistant in charge, and would help him and, you know, the planning stages and the teaching and all the rest. And it continued after the life of the church team and sort of kept me close to Blackjack while I wasn't on a team or playing for a few years there.
So are you still participating in boot camps?
I still am. We have two this week.
And what is your incentive to keep coming back? I'm sure it's not the high wages Colin is paying you to show up and give these speeches.
Yeah, I mean, I love what Colin has built, and I think it's a good thing, and he's a good person to be around, and he brings good energy around him, and so it's really the kind of work that can feel a lot like a vacation when it's happening, but I also have such a fire for beating the game, and I like communicating that to new players. You know, when they come in, I think that they're thinking about, you know, the riches that are possibly out there or what they need to do to get those riches. And so I kind of come with this, like, remember to tap into the fire. It's all about the fire inside of you that's going to make it happen, because in the end, this is a job. It does require work and it is a fight. You know, you can't just throw your jacket on the back of a chair and put your feet up and expect that you're going to, you know, win the battle. You have to have your head looking around for the next shoe that's shuffling. You need to know your spots. You need to wong in and not be afraid of that. And, you know, all the little tips and tricks that I think are just, they come from having that fire to beat the game at any level.
So after the church team ended, you now play on your own, right? How do you feel about playing as solo versus being on part of a team?
Yeah, well, I like being associated with people in some form. When I was on the team, we had a big group and there was a group dynamic. And now it's similar, but it's just a smaller group of people. And before I was betting up to two hands of $3,000, and now I'm betting up to two hands of $300. And to me, it's exactly the same. I've told people if it was a $10 max table, I would sit down and I would fight it hard. I love it. It's just, I think there's something, I think that the card counting at blackjack, it approaches holiness in this sort of idea of rhythm and paying attention. It's sort of this prayerful act. And so it's the beating the game itself, not necessarily at what stakes. The stakes can change for me, but the basics are what bring me back.
I'm curious. I'm sure you could be betting more money if you wanted to. Why those stakes? Is that what you can?
Right.
Yeah. Why those stakes?
Well, I think it's. I like working with good people. So I found a few good people, and that's what the investment is. You know, people have come along with bigger opportunities money wise, and I thought about it and said, no, I just don't think this is the right situation. I don't want to be responsible for some large investor having to work through big losses. You know, I'm fine being responsible with their money, but I don't want to have to bear the burden of their emotional distress through the ups and the downs. And so I kind of like to find a situation where I'm working with people who understand the game, and the lower stakes are fine with me. And it's like I said, I'm a writer, so I don't need to do this, you know, every day. I like it kind of as a side gig.
So when you gamble today, this is not your own money you're gambling with. You're gambling with somebody else's money. Did I hear you right on that?
Yeah, that's primarily true. I'm invested a little bit, but I'm not the primary investor.
And why is that? Why not? Why have you not invested more?
Well, I guess I was spoiled from the beginning. So the church team, it really was like a day job in the sense that I was getting paid by the hour on an expected win. And I soaked up all the things about that were really enjoyable, you know, not having to worry after a big loss, knowing I could go out and come away and pay my light bill no matter what, win or lose. So I liked that scenario. I think I was making money steadily, but it wasn't riches. So at the end of the church team, I didn't necessarily have a lump sum to start my own thing. And, you know, it didn't hurt my feelings or anything. And I just think that this is the kind of scenario that I like. And maybe someday I'll get to the point where I'm just playing for myself, and that's fine. But there's something about the camaraderie and the rapport of working with other people that I like. So,
well, and you get the benefit of many more hours being put in on a shared bankroll, right? I mean, you weather the losing streaks much easier when you have other people who are also playing at the same time.
Right, that's very true.
Have you had any really bad losing streaks?
Well, I'm kind of in the middle of one right now. I'm about 110 hours in, and I'm in the negative. So that's strange for me, because that doesn't happen very often. But it happens, and if it happens, then I need to weather that storm too.
Yeah, and that's not always easy. Although if you've been playing for 15 years, you're more accustomed to what the swings are like.
Yeah, and I, you know, it's fun to objectively treat it like an experiment. You know, like let's say that I'm treating this as a 200-hour experiment. Well, 200 hours is a long way off. Let's get there and then see what the numbers look like, as opposed to living in the, like, oh, no, everything's terrible. I'm losing money. This is awful. It's like, oh, no, we're part of an experiment. Let's see where we get by 200 hours.
Right. I had a friend back many years ago who was on a team, and the team leader offered him, I think it was $25 an hour, or, you know, a piece of the bankroll, a player share on the bankroll. And he opted for – he kept opting for the hourly salary. And, you know, he turned out to be the biggest money winner on that team. And, you know, he ended up, I think, resenting the fact that he was making less money than everybody else. But, I don't know. He was more comfortable just having that guaranteed hourly wage.
Yeah, there's something about it. I mean, I think that we all can be distracted by money and riches. And I just like keeping that kind of at bay and reminding myself of what makes the game beatable for me and just focusing on those things.
So do you how much are you playing now? How many hours a month are you putting in?
Well, pandemic aside, about 20 hours a month, just about one trip a month.
Oh. And pandemic, have you gone back to play since the pandemic, or are you still waiting?
Yeah, I dipped my toe in Las Vegas when it reopened just to see what was going on, and there were definitely some positives. I love wearing this sort of train bandit look, this bandana that covers my whole face. That's great, and I love the limiting it. They're limiting table play to three people. So it keeps those crowded tables or no more. But obviously it's a little bit sketchy as far as like where we are and how you get this disease and you know, just want to be careful and want to be safe. And
sure.
You know, with fewer casinos open, you know, fewer opportunities. So it's definitely not yet back to anything close to what it was before.
Now, you are a married man with kids.
Yes. Yes.
The type of woman who would marry somebody with a graduate degree in divinity and the type of woman who would marry a professional gambler does not sound like the same woman. How does this work? Do you have two wives?
Right. Well, you could ask her if she's two wives. She might be, but she's all in one person. So, no, I think that these things all actually work together. The type of quote unquote gambler that I am fits with the kind of, theology person that I am. And you know, we've been great. We met on America Online. You remember America Online?
Yeah.
So we were sort of the first adopters of online romance, so to speak. We met on AOL, and I sent my theology master's project, which was an allegorical children's novel, and she really connected with that, and we both bonded over the fact that we were both from sort of Baptist missionary pastor type families, and we're sort of a little bit more rebellious. Well, I think we both still had some version of our faith intact, but we were also ready to break free, and so we've done that together. And you know, we've just decided like life is a roller coaster, and we're on it together. So up, down, left, right, we've sort of have been in step with each other, which is been nice, because I never had the idea at the beginning of it that I would be, you know, counting cards or doing anything like that. And so we've just kind of weathered life and taken it as it comes.
How do your kids take to the old man being a gambler?
Oh, I think they like it. It's a good story for their friends. I've got an 18-year-old son, so he's very curious. I think he wants to become a card counter, so we're going to need to get him trained sometime soon.
So you're encouraging him to follow in the in your footsteps?
Well, if he wants to, I mean, I would definitely encourage him to learn the game so that he can beat it. You know, if he wants to take on the lifestyle in any form, that's fine by me. It's not a family business, so I don't feel like I would be burned if he went another way.
Yeah, I, you know, with my kids, they certainly knew and understood. And if they were interested, then I was willing to help in any way. And if they weren't, I was not going to push them toward, you know, something they didn't want to do.
Right.
So at least one of your sons, Richard, has shown some interest.
Yeah. He actually seems to be more interested in sports than he is in table games, but
sports betting.
Yeah, he hasn't started sports betting, but he's much more interested in that. So whether he ultimately does anything about it, I don't know. We'll see. But he has played table games in the past, but he hasn't shown a lot of initiative to go out and scout for himself.
But if you find a good game, he's all up for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Very good. So we're going to take a brief commercial break, and we will be back talking to Loudon Offen. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. The promotion in August is half-price Walmart cards. Earn and redeem $25 for the slot club points, $8,333. And you get a $50 Walmart card. Limit 10 for the month. Note that the points must be earned in August, and you may not use pre-existing points for this promotion. Also, if you earn the points and then cash them for dinner or something and do not have them left, you're not going to be able to do this, because getting the $50 Walmart card does take away that $25 worth of slot club points. So this is, the Walmart cards are not in addition to the slot club points. They're in lieu of. At predicted.org, you can place small bets on a number of political happenings, like who's going to be the vice president, or like who's going to win in Arizona or in Michigan or any other particular place. The numbers change on a regular basis. If you are if you're confident in your prediction, this is a good place to put a small amount of money where your mouth is. Our listeners receive a one-time offer of a deposit match up to $20 at predicted.org/promo/edge. You must play the money through once and cannot withdraw it for 30 days. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Wheel Poker Deluxe. This is a game where you pay an extra 5 coins per game, meaning triple play costs 20 coins or 5 play costs 30 coins, and the bonuses come on dealt trips, full houses, quads. Slightly different dealt things for Deuces Wild variations. If you get one of these bonuses, you spin the wheel. When the wheel spins, it lands on a drawing opportunity. Sometimes it's 100 play, 4 to a flush. Sometimes it's 10 play with a pair of aces. Sometimes it's triple play, 4 to the royal, etc. There is no skill involved in the hold for the bonus, and the bonus is earned on the draw, meaning that if you know the strategy to the base game, you know the strategy for Wheel Poker Deluxe version. It adds a bit of EV and quite a bit of variance. Surprisingly, the triple play version always pays a bit more than the 5-play version. As an example, 9-6-double-double, the base game normally pays 98.98%. The triple play version pays 99.47%, where the 5-play version pays 99.31%. And these are the triple and five play versions of Wheel Poker Deluxe. All right, we are now back to talk to Loudon Offen. Loudon, you told us you have a story about Barona. What happened?
Yeah, well, this is before the days that I knew Max. And I had been backed off at Barona. And I knew that they were very good at knowing who was in their casino and what they were capable of. So I went to the casino with a plan, and that plan was I checked into the hotel before I did anything else, and I left the property and changed in my car into my disguise, and then re-entered the property and went into the casino and played. I played all day, all night. Left the property, changed back into outfit number one, drove back to the property, into the hotel, stayed in the hotel overnight. In the morning, I came down to pay my bill or check out, and they said, oh, everything is covered. I said, how's that possible? And they said, well, you must have been playing in the casino. We got everything. Everything's taken care of. And the long and the short of it, I was comped against my will. I was not trying to be known. They did not back me off. They did not, you know, to my face, ask for ID or ID me or anything like that. But clearly they had not only ID'd me, they had, you know, figured out exactly who I was, passed that information to somebody who then said, well, let's get him back by comping his hotel when he's not looking. So it was definitely a Max sort of a move to say, oh, you think you're on top of it? Well, I'm more on top of it, but I'm also nice. So there you go.
That is pretty funny. Yeah, that is one very unusual casino.
Yes.
Now, you had a run-in with a surveillance person?
Yes, I was at a station's property in Vegas, and I was in line. I got backed off pretty quickly. Was in line to cash out, and I heard someone yelling my name. And I've trained myself to not turn when my name is yelled, because that's one trick, which is they try to confirm your ID by getting you to turn your head when they yell your name. So I was not turning my head, and everyone else in line was turning their head. And this guy was yelling and yelling and yelling. And so finally I'm like, okay. I turn my head, and standing there is sort of this ZZ Top looking dude with one arm. And he looks like he does not belong in a casino, much less in a position of power. Which was the case. He whisked me to the front of the line and got the cashier to pay me right out. And he said, I'm buying you a drink. We're having a drink. So I'm like, who is this guy and what does he want? I don't know. But I think this is going to be high entertainment. So let's have a drink. So we had a drink there. And turns out he was at the time the head of all surveillance of stations casinos. And he says, I've ID'd you at these different sessions. He named a few different sessions where he'd ID'd me. And he was... It was clear as the conversation went on that he was really sort of proud to have met me, or proud to have the chance to sit down and talk and ask a few questions. And he was even giving me some tips for how to avoid getting backed off at stations properties. And, you know, he would lament with me. I said, oh, I got kicked out really quickly over here, and they tried to take my picture. And he's like, oh, you know, those young assholes, they don't know what they're doing over there. They're just, you know, knee-jerk reactions. And he was a good time. So we kept in touch with the church team. We kept in touch with him. And at some point, he relayed the information back to us that the Griffin agency had declared me, or decided or felt that I was the most notorious card counter in America at that particular moment. And so I've hung on to that, as anyone should and would, hung on to that title. Just a strange set of occurrences. To happen, and but it's nice to know that I was you know, appreciated or noticed for my hard work.
Yeah, so he was rather notorious. His name, he called himself Stumpy, because of the one arm, which I wouldn't make that up, right? Unless he was calling himself that. But I had a run in with him as well. He seemed to be really obsessed with professional players. He just seemed to love it. And anyway, I came into Vegas Now, this is going back. I think this was maybe the year 2000 or 2001. And okay. I came into Vegas for the blackjack ball. And mm-hmm. I just needed a room. So I went to Palace Station. And I got a player's card. And went to a double deck. And I was just going to flat bet, like two hands of 100 for a while. And I figured that would get me enough for them to give me a room. And so I'm playing for a while, and now I see this guy down in the pit, and he's wearing like a Hawaiian shirt. And you're right, he kind of looked like a homeless person. And finally, he comes up with the shift boss and says, you know, I'm sorry, but you can't play blackjack anymore. And I yeah. said, why not? And I think I had maybe gone from one to two. And Stumpy has these color pictures of me that which at the time I didn't realize there was a database called SIN, Surveillance Information Network.
Ah.
And I didn't realize I was even in it. But this he showed me the pictures, and they were quite good and in color. And I was like, well, I don't know what that's about. And he's like, oh, I saw you raise your bet. I was like, I went from one to two. And he goes, yeah, but how much were you going to go? And anyway, they had already given me a room at this point, or told me that they were going to give me a room. So I left the property. I came back, and I go to the front desk, and I check into the room, and I go up to the room, and 5 minutes later, there's security knocking on the door. Sorry, we're not going to be able to comp your room. So, yeah, that was my run-in with Stumpy.
Wow.
So Stumpy is dead. He died a number of years ago, I heard. So, but lots of players who've been around a long time have Stumpy stories. They would be in touch with him.
Yeah, he seemed like a good time. He definitely was a colorful character. It's fun to come across a few of those now and then.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have any other run-ins with surveillance?
Well, I've had some pretty funny, you know, one of my favorites, small town casino, and the owner was this guy in a wheelchair, and he was notorious for he was always on the property, on the premises, and I heard that he had some sort of medical condition in which he only slept 15 minutes a night. That was just what his body needed was 15 minutes. And so he was just always at the casino, and he had an interest. He tried to defeat my tactics in an interesting way that I had never seen anywhere else. But let me set this up with the fact that, you know, as far as dealers, one of the fastest dealers I've ever played with was at this small town casino. She was lightning fast, so fast that I really had to be on my toes, but I was loving it because, of course, more hands per hour means more money per hour. But the way that he tried to defeat me was apparently he had a meeting and told all his dealers to deal as slowly as possible. And so it was just odd that they were really like maple syrup slow. And finally, this dealer who the one who is usually lightning fast, she was there and she was not in a good mood. And she was, you know, her version of slow was like just sort of an average speed fast dealer. But she really was sort of she had felt handcuffed by this policy. And I finally she let it slip that the owner had said every dealer needs to deal as slowly as possible. And then at some point I wasn't leaving. It was still a beatable game. So eventually he, you know, rolled out in his wheelchair and backed me off personally. And I went outside and was just trying to like work through all this weirdness in my head. And, you know, out of a random door, some person pops and shakes my hand and says, I'm from surveillance. I've been watching you the last, you know, number of weeks that you've been in here. And I just want to say you are amazing. It's been fun watching you. Thank you for all the good times or whatever. Sorry that you've been treated poorly. So I like those kinds of surveillance run-ins where somebody is, you know, appreciative of the art and came and found me to tell me about it.
That is so weird. You know, sometimes casinos come up with the weirdest ideas about what to do when faced with this, and just and why they didn't just back you off in the first place. I don't know, but yeah, that's just so strange.
I mean, we like the game, and they like the game, I guess, sometimes. Like,
some
you know, the push and the pull.
Yeah, some of them do. Yeah. What about cash? Like, especially with the church team, if you're betting two hands of 3,000, you need to be carrying a lot of cash with you when you go on a trip. Did you have any problems or issues with traveling with cash?
For the most part, no. So church team kind of existed in that age where you could go through the monitor at the airport with cash on you, and as long as you didn't ring the bell, you could get through. So travel was a little bit easier. But there was one time in Philadelphia where, for whatever reason, I set the stuff off. So I had to put it through the machine. I had to go to the little side room and explain, which was all fine. But then I'm walking through the airport, and suddenly there's someone on my left shoulder, like just over my left shoulder, and someone over my right shoulder, two guys in suits, and they introduce themselves as the, you know, DEA agents. And, can we just pull over here and have a little chat? And this little chat consisted of about 1,000 questions a minute, you know, which was, where are you coming from? Where are you going? Did you buy gas? Do you have receipts? Where did you stay? What's your family? You know, who's your boss? What are his kids' names? You know, just every question under the sun. And you know, I was excited to tell him the truth because in my business, you don't get to do a lot of truth telling. You're ducking and dodging and, you know, lying about what you're doing in terms of, you know, the way you're playing. You're pretending you're a high roller. But so it's fun when you get to tell somebody, hey, this is what I do for a living. Here are all my records. And isn't this wild? And so I just told him the whole story. At some point, this main DEA guy stepped away and the assistant DEA guy continued the questioning. The main guy came back and let me go, said, you're good to go. I found out later that when he'd stepped away, he'd called Ben, who was my boss manager at the time, and had asked him about me and had told him, you know what, we were ready to seize all this money, which was, I think I had $90,000 in cash on me. So we were ready to seize all this money. We have all the authority and rights to do so, but you have a good employee. So I want to just tell you that you have a good employee and good luck. And he sent me on my way without relaying that story. I found that out later, but
wow,
that was nice. It was a close call that it went in my favor.
Yeah, that's I mean, I'm sure you would have gotten it back, but you would have had to hire a lawyer and go through all the rigmarole.
Yeah, well, and that happened to our team before at a border crossing. And when they got the money back, it was minus 10% for fees or something. So
Jesus.
I don't know if we would have gotten it all back.
Was that the Canadian border? Or?
Yeah, that was the Canadian border. Two guys went to the Canadian border and said, we want to declare this money. And they said, oh, well, you have to do that with the Americans. And so they turned their car around and went to the Americans. So we wanted to declare this money. And they said, oh, you entered Canada without declaring this money? And they took it. And it was a lot of paperwork and binders full of information. And when the money came back, it was minus 10% for fees.
Wow.
You mentioned a few minutes ago about this guy who only sleeps 15 minutes a night.
Yeah.
I do that too sometimes, although I also sleep 7 hours during the day, but I only sleep 15 minutes at night. So
wow.
I guess that gives me a lot in common with him.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool if it's not a detriment. You know, it seems like you could get more accomplished.
Yeah. Now, you're also a writer and do other creative things. Is there anything that you have done in those areas that you would like to let our listeners know about?
Yeah, well, I always if people want to read my short stories, which is what I write a lot of, they can find me at my pen name website. So if you're ready for this, it's David, last name Drury, Drury, author.com. So David, Drury, AUTHOR.com. It's where I have all of my fiction.
And we'll put a link in the show notes for that.
Oh, great. Thank you so much.
Yep. Anything else you want? Do you want to, if people want to get you on Twitter or an email or anything like that, if you don't want to give it out, that's fine. If you do, that's fine too. And we would put any links like that in the show notes.
Oh, I think it's not necessary. If they want to find my Twitter and things like that, that will be there on my own personal writing website.
Great.
Yeah, I don't do a lot of blackjack posting or chattering on social media.
Very good. So we've come to the time of the show that we do recommend it. So, Richard, do you have something you want to tell our audience about?
Oh, of course. So my recommended this week is something called Long Reads, and it is a website that puts together the best long articles from various magazines and websites over the course of the week, and they put up 5 or 10 articles that are – you know, longer than 3 paragraphs. So it's sometimes investigative journalism. Anyway, it's really good writing and with a little bit more in-depth than many of the sort of standard news sites that you might find. So, yeah, if you just Google Long Reads, I get an email every Friday, and it'll have a list of the top stories from that week.
So it can take several hours to go through the entire list.
Yeah, if you were going to read everything on the list, yeah, you might have a couple of hours worth of reading.
But
not every story, you know, each week is something I want to read, right?
Yes.
Because it's a very diverse subjects.
Very good. So we want to thank Loudon Offen and David Drury for participating today. Thank you very much.
Oh, wait. I think he had a recommended.
He did. Oops. Thank you. Good.
Well, hey, David. Sure. We were talking a little bit about theology. All I'm going to recommend is what I have been reading recently, which was Thomas Merton's Seven Story Mountain, which I didn't realize was a bestseller. But this guy, he was a writer, sort of a marginal spiritual person in the first half of his life, but sort of late in life he became a monk, and then he started writing this autobiography. So it's just been kind of a fascinating read, connected to sort of spiritual things and spiritual thinking. The other thing I would recommend, I just recently saw Jojo Rabbit, which is a sort of a wild wild movie with a soft heart, so I liked that one.
Okay, I have not seen that, so I will look for that.
Very good.
Thank you so much, guys. I really appreciated it.
Well, good. Thank you. And thank you, Richard. And go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.